taking care of business. Path to Pro Radio is on.
All right, here we go.
My knees playing.
And welcome to another Path to Pro. I'm Jimmy Ray.
And I'm Bill Crespo. And we're here with another great interview. You know, it's so interesting to see, first of all, the market is changing. People are needing help. And I know that, you know, some people are out there looking for coaches and also looking for advice. And today we have Lindsay Dowd. And Lindsay, can you hear me okay?
Yeah, you sound great, guys.
Thanks. And so Lindsay's got a 25-year career in sales and management. She went to the IBM boot camp and everything else that goes on, which I'm always interested to see what they do at IBM. And then tell us the story, because this is really interesting. It's so interesting how you just to say it, that what happened to you. But go ahead and give us the lowdown on what happened to you at IBM.
Sure. So I, like you said, I've been in sales for 25 years and 23 of those years I spent at IBM, and I received some incredible training. I worked for some incredible leaders. I worked for a bunch of dunderheads too, but for the most part, it was a very positive experience. I left IBM on my own. I decided I was going to do a new chapter and start with a new company, went to this new company, and in 6 months, I got fired. And for anyone that knows me, they couldn't do that math. They couldn't figure out how that happens.
Mm-hmm. Not Lindsay.
Pretty much. And what it really came down to was it was extremely personal. It was a real clash in leadership styles. And it gave me, aside from the kick in the gut and the total, you know, blindsided moment of being fired, something you never plan for. It gave me the fire to create Heartbeat for Hire. And I didn't intend to rhyme that, but it did give me the inspiration, because what I knew at IBM from managing really big teams, and what I know from being managed by someone who wasn't a great manager, is I know how to build irresistible sales culture, and I know what it feels like when it's not there. Mm-hmm. And when it is there, the magic happens.
Absolutely.
And that's what we can talk about.
And you know, I can kind of relate, Lindsay, to you getting let go and everybody just scratching their heads, because my history here in this area is I've been very blessed with a long radio career and been number one several times with a couple different stations in this market.
All right, tell them what happened and tell them what happened.
Well, the first time I got fired from my current radio station, we were number one, 2554, and it took 3 years to go from 17th to number one. And the guy said, you know, I think I want a different morning show in here, and now's a good time because we can take it a hit. So they fired us just before Christmas when we were number one in the area. They went to ninth place, hired us back within the year. We never missed a Christmas party, and we were back to number one in 6 months. And then the next time they fired us, I think it was a money thing, but I'm not sure. But that was 7 years ago, and I just got asked to come back and be the program director as well as the afternoon in August. So it's just an amazing thing, and sometimes it doesn't make sense, and we all know it's the wrong move for the company, but they do it anyway. So I
but
totally
let me ask you something.
Yeah.
Those
yeah.
moments that you got fired, I mean, aside from the emotional, like, feeling, how could this happen to me? For me, at least, and you tell me if this was your situation, for me, it was the best gift. And I would never have left. I would have
absolutely.
Muscled through. I would have suffered. I would have stayed anxious. My health was starting to suffer. Mm-hmm. And I wasn't a quitter. So it was a gift.
Right. That was very much me. And, you know, it's funny you say that, because I have five children, and the youngest is now almost 16. And I never, because I was always a morning show guy, all these kids' lives never walked any of them to the bus. And the last 7 years, I've been seeing my son off to school every day. And
aww.
I wouldn't trade it for the world.
It's so funny that Lindsay said that, because I wrote down door opening. And I was going to ask you that question, because this was like almost like a blessing that you got fired.
It was.
To open the door to do what you're doing now. But what was... why do people get culture so wrong sometimes that they think they get it right? What's the deal with culture? Why is culture so friggin' important?
So as I said at the top, you know, I took some brilliant, brilliant leadership training at IBM, like from Harvard and Duke, and really, really incredible people. But nobody has figured out how to teach culture. They talk about, you know, how to have a tough conversation. They talk about, you know, how do you lead a team through forecasting, or, you know, the mechanics of being a leader. But the culture thing is harder to pin down because it's a feeling. Hmm. And the reality is, when a company spends time giving back to their people in a way that supports them, you know, mentally, emotionally, and from a health perspective, the results they're going to get are going to be dramatically different than the ones who micromanage and the ones who demand you finish something at a certain time without regard for, you know, are you doing okay? Do you understand the job? Like, mm-hmm. the check-ins that are so necessary. And, you know, I have a one part of my methodology, I have a concept called inverted management. And this comes from definitely a servant leadership mindset. But the question that I start with is, how can I be the best manager for you? And let me tell you guys, that is a humbling question to ask. You are admitting you don't know everything. You will get different answers from every single person you ask. And that's based on tenure, career, experience, aspirations, whatever. And when you find out what they need, you can support them. And oh, by the way, while this is happening, you're building trust. Mm-hmm. And when you build trust, that's when people will take risks. That's when new best practices will be formed. It is a game changer. And teaching trust is hard.
Yeah.
People don't, like, I think a lot of people have the misconception that becoming a leader is an advancement of my career, full stop. And they're not asked the question of, why do you want to be a leader? Do you care about the success of others? Because if you don't, and you're really only in it for yourself, you're not going to be a great leader. Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I've found, too, that when people want to work for you and want to produce for you, your product is going to be superior.
Oh, no question. And I'll tell you a short story. This is true for me. I had a leader. She was a friend of mine, someone I respected deeply. She became my boss. And I was telling her what I had been working on this account. And it was a very, very large account. I had $150 million quota, very big team. And I told her all the things I was working on. And she said, girl, I've got your back. Now fly. And let me tell you something. Hearing those words were goosebump worthy then. They're still goosebump worthy to me now. But what it gave me was this, oh, wow, I can take risks. She's got my back. And if I screw up, she's going to help defend me. But me having the confidence to stretch and do something different and do something harder inspired everyone around me to do the same. So we crushed it. We went to 100% Club. We did all the things and all the awards that you could imagine from that little statement. It was such a feeling of confidence. And I, in turn, have kept on to that statement and said it in many different forms to people I've managed over the years. But when they know I've got their back, they perform. There's so many examples of that.
Lindsay, do you think that a leader has this inside of them naturally? Can they be taught this? I know you're coaching a lot of C-suite people, but tell me about how that works with someone who you kind of go, I don't know if he has it. Can this be taught?
I actually love this question because I have several friends who have confessed to me that they were total, I don't know if we can swear on this.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. So they're total asshole leaders before, and they have transformed, and they love to tell me these stories.
Great.
They'll say, you know, I was demanding. I didn't care about feelings, feelings, schmeelings, no time for fucking feelings. Like, let's just crush it. And that kind of hustle mentality and that push just burns people out. It doesn't inspire. And when you inspire people, all of a sudden they're like, wow, I want to do this on my own because they believe in me and I'm going to go crush this. Yeah. Not because like I have to, it's because I want to. And that's when you see the best work happen.
Yeah, absolutely.
I'll tell you, people are 6 times more productive when they're happy. Just think about that. 6 times. That's science. That's not Lindsay. That's science. Wow. And if you think about creating an environment for people to blossom and thrive, what good you could possibly do with that? It's awesome.
Yeah, there's nothing more inspiring to employees than to see their superior officer or manager, whatever, going out on a limb for them,
yes,
and backing their play and letting them know, dude, I'm here for you. You need anything, you let me know.
Mm. Yeah. It sounds like the Wolf of Wall Street syndrome in the 80s when you were talking about that, because that was a cool thing to be that kind of manager in those days.
Oh, yeah.
Which, you know, when did it change? When did you see that this whole culture thing wasn't catching up to the changes that were taking place in corporate America today?
You know, it's kind of been a slow change up until like the last year. And you'd find these pockets of leaders who were phenomenal and who, like, I'll never forget, I got promoted into this role to lead a really large team. And my boss said to me, she's like, okay, I can't wait to hear your ideas. What do you want to do to make this awesome? And I'm looking at her going, what? That's phenomenal. Like, know what I think is
you
great.
Care what I think.
All right. And so, you know, what was so fascinating was I had another manager who was like, I only speak in sports analogies, I don't relate to women, you know, just get it fucking done. And nobody enjoyed that except the people that were in his inner circle.
Yeah.
When you can inspire a whole team, you know what happened? And this is the saddest thing that happens. When you have a brilliant leader who creates a wonderful environment and then they move on to another role, it creates a vacuum. And everyone in the wake of their departure is terrified because we don't know what's coming next. We don't know what kind of leader is going to try and fill their shoes.
Right.
And that's wonderful that you had that. But what companies need to understand is all of your leaders need to be like that. They all need to aspire to some kind of greatness and some kind of inspiration, because that's how you keep it going.
And have you ever wondered when companies in any line let superior performers, managers, let them go somewhere else over 10 grand a year or whatever it is?
I mean, something small.
Unbelievable.
Yeah.
I've seen that so often, and
it's ridiculous.
You know, I was always taught that you fight to get your people as much money as you can, every opportunity you've got it. So I knew, like, if there was a window for promotions or a window for raises, I fought like hell for everyone on my team. And they became forever loyal to me because of that. And it was such a human practice. It wasn't anything like, right, she's a superhero. No, I'm just making it right. Like, everyone needs to be at a reasonable level of work, and you need to be getting paid for that work. That's just facts.
You know, I heard that the people leave for the lack of significance. Is that true?
Oh, they do. I mean, I'll tell you two things. One, the highest performers are already looking for other jobs. That you have to know. That's a fact. And if you want to breed an environment of mediocrity, keep doing what you're doing. Keep micromanaging.
Right.
Don't think differently. Don't try. And here's the thing. If leaders have been successful, they forget that they need to continue to be great learners. And when you don't continue to sharpen your skills, continue to take courses, hire a coach, you know, go to conventions, whatever it is, those things make you better. Those things, being exposed to great leaders, make you better. And leaders become lazy, and they say things to me, this is what you always killed me, I don't have time for one-on-ones. Oh my God.
Yeah.
Okay. I hate
we know
that.
Where you're going.
It's your responsibility. If you are leading people, you must make time to check in. You got to ask them, how are you doing? I had a woman on my team. She was moved onto my team from a marketing role. She totally, I couldn't understand it. She was putting up zeros 2 months in a row. And I had asked one of the women on the team, who was like a team lead, I said, she doesn't even know how to lie yet. Like, nobody puts up zeros. This is bad. What's happening? And we called her and I said, you know, PJ, do you understand your job? I'm worried that maybe it wasn't explained to you. She goes, Lindsay, I have no idea what I'm doing. I don't. Can you help me? I said, yeah, I'd love to. So we sat down and we told her, these are the things you can say. We've got your back. This is what you should expect from your clients, your partners, whatever. This is what you can expect for the people that are supporting your team. And if you get stuck, reach out, but we're here for you. In 6 months, she became my top performer.
It's amazing.
Wow.
And that was, that was just checking her where she's at, making sure we understood what was going on with her. And by giving that investment, she's gone on to, she's now managing teams. She's crushing it. But we believed in her and she was smart. We just had to understand what was going on in her world. And that's something that leaders forget.
Yeah.
They just are so busy with the tasks at hand that they're not asking those questions. Why do you want to be a manager? Have you ever thought about being a manager? Or are you stuck? Are you unhappy? What were the things you loved most about a job you held before? What can I do to be better for you? Those are all really human, easy questions, but it gives you so much insight.
Do you think COVID has changed what a manager has to and a leader has to be right now? Because first of all, the leaders sometimes that I've noticed don't understand that the better they become, the more valuable they are, the more they get paid.
So
they
true.
Forget about it. But has COVID really changed the style of leadership and culture?
It has. I think, you know, the first thing that became the biggest hurdle, especially in sales, is, you know, everyone's remote. So, you know, I was always remote. So for me, that wasn't such a change, but to really not have those conferences, to not have those face-to-face interactions as a leader, one of the things that I had to provide was connection, collaboration, and purpose. Mm. But the other thing was fun. You can't miss the fun.
Right.
So two comments on that. You know, purpose is something that leaders forget. And purpose is telling your people your job, your work means this to our company. It's the difference between profitable and not profitable, or it's, we will be a $1 billion company versus, you know, a whatever company. So being able to articulate why their work matters is going to make their work more meaningful, first of all.
Mm-hmm.
But fun, I'll tell you, there's a CEO of Zoom and he has a fun squad. I'm not kidding. He has a team of people.
Let's go work there.
Every month they come up with something fun, whether it's a challenge or a virtual background or something. And my friend is on the squad and she's like, Lindsay, our culture is amazing. They call themselves Zoomies and they support each other and talk about a remote world. It was founded with Zoom. But you've got to provide those moments of fun and those moments of connection. Those will take you so, so far because it changes your team dynamic from let's get on this dreaded call to, oh, I want to see these people. I want to check in because I know something about them. I know about their kids, or I know there's a kid that's going to the Olympic trials, or this person has visited every major ballpark in North America but one. I want to ask her which one is left.
Right.
You know, you have all of a sudden these moments where people are more interesting, you're connected so much more, and your work is more meaningful when you do that.
And you know, those verbal gifts, I mean, they are gifts, as far as I'm concerned, to your employees. When you say things that, about their lives and act like, you listen, I care about what's going on with you. How's your mom doing or whatever? And then, and also the little things like, I gave my morning show a couple of Wawa gift cards, and they weren't $1,000 a piece.
Right,
I mean, they were just, you know, enough to get a tank of gas or something.
Oh my God.
But just for doing something that sounded great on the air, here you guys, you're doing a great job. That, I couldn't have handed them gold bricks and have been a better thing at that moment.
Well, you're telling them you see them. And you're recognizing the work that they're doing. And recognition is such an easy thing as a leader to leverage. This is one of the concepts I teach. And most managers have a budget. They have either, you know, some points balance or some cash or prizes or something they can give out. But even verbal recognition, hey guys, I want to tell you, this is what Kyoko did on the last call. And he did this. He told me he was going after this challenge. He did it. Kyoko, tell the story. I want everyone to hear this. First of all, you're sharing the spotlight, which makes you a generous leader. Second, you're giving someone the floor. And then all of a sudden you're creating this friendly competition of, hey, I want to tell my story. I want to share. And it's a good thing, but it's contagious. And it's so great when you're constantly saying, hey guys, so-and-so who's supporting us on this team, I'm inviting her to the team call. I want everyone to celebrate the work that she's done. We couldn't have done it without her.
That's great.
That is an easy thing to do.
Yeah.
Easy.
And you know, Lindsay, I think also for like non-obvious team leaders, like attorneys, like
yes.
other people can take this concept and work it. So I had my attorney out of Manhattan, Richard Rosen, when he first started with me about 10 or 12 years ago, we had an issue that I needed an attorney who knew franchises. So then he worked with me, said he'll work with me, and then he called me up like at a weird time. And I go, oh, crap, he's calling me like at 10 o'clock at night. And then I'm looking at my clock going, he's charging me, you know? And then he asked, but here's the question. How's your family doing, Bill? How are you doing through all this? And I went, this is different. And then for the last year or two, now he comes into Manhattan at 11:30.
Did he charge you to ask you that question?
Yes, he did. Okay. I'm just kidding. No. I looked at my bill and went, what, $1,000 for saying how's your family? No, he never did that. So, but it was just like really weird. It's like when the doctor calls about your kids when they're sick and they go, how's that little Johnny doing? So I went, this is weird. But he was this way for the last 10, 12 years that I've known him. I wonder, how you doing, Bill? How's the family? What's going on? Tell me. And he would share stuff. And I went, like I would almost like... I mean, I've never experienced that with a guy, and he's like one of the top franchise attorneys in the country. And I go, more people need to hear what you're saying in any aspect, even smaller little 1099 teams where you don't, you know, they're not really employees. How does someone motivate people that are on commissions that can leave you? I mean, what have you seen in leadership when you have 1099 people? When you don't have salary people that have to get paid and you can fire them, I mean, that's a stimulant in itself, stimulation in itself to stay with it. But what do you think about that? Because there's people that are listening that are running small teams that these people cannot show up, you know, just leave.
Well, I mean, I come from sales, so everybody's on commission where I come from. So, you know, there are certainly the supporting teams were the ones who, you know, the commission didn't really affect them. But salespeople are you're supposed to be a hustler by nature. But the big mistake that I always see is the first thing that everybody says is you take care of the client. And yes, that's true. But the thing that people have forgotten is you have to take care of your people. And nobody does this better than Richard Branson.
Yep.
He's always subscribed to the philosophy of, if I take care of my people, they'll take care of our clients. Uh-huh. And it's so true. So just like the example I gave you before of, girl, I've got your back, now fly. When you're a leader and you're inspiring people to do great work, and in sales, the incentives speak for themselves, right? You get commission. And if you really crush it, maybe you win President's Club or 100% Club or whatever. So that's all out there. But there's also just the wonderful gratification of winning a deal and creating a rapport with your client where you're providing incredible value that you've elevated yourself from just a salesperson to an advisor, to someone that they are interested in trusting. And I'll tell you, I had a lot of clients ask me over the years, Lindsay, how are they treating you? Are you happy? Do you like your boss? And I always thought that was so interesting that they asked me that, because they cared to know they're buying from somebody who's being treated well. Uh-huh. And I don't think enough leaders really think about that. But to motivate people and to share the spoils and share the glory, the going back to what we were saying on recognition, that's an easy way to motivate people, you know, share a success story. It doesn't have to be the biggest sale. It doesn't have to even be a win. It can be a story of, I got this guy who hated us to want to talk to us for the first time. This is huge. We can bring in some experts and have a much deeper conversation, because they would never do that in the last 5-10 years. You know, those moments are equally important. They don't result in revenue right away, but it sets you up for some big wins down the road. So,
and I've seen these leaders going after the squeaky wheel, or talking to the squeaky wheel first, and you've got superstars that can be developed and grown into the team, and then you have this little cliquish type of thing going on. Have you seen a lot of that going on?
Of course, of course, and a lot of that stems from, you know, a lot of the good old boy, you know, really cutthroat hustle culture salespeople, and there aren't very, I was in tech, obviously there's not a lot of women tech sellers. There's not a lot of women in pharmaceutical. There's not a lot of women sellers. And, you know, I think that landscape is changing. I think people are really trying to be more diverse with their choices and bring more people up, elevate more people. But, you know, I was told so many times over the years, oh yeah, you're going to get promoted. Your director position is waiting for you. And, you know, it took years for these things to happen where I'm watching other people just jump right up. And I'm like, he's a guy and he's not half as good as I am. And why? So there's still a lot of that nonsense and those things we can't explain that happen. But I think the veils are being pulled back. And I really do feel like leaders are exposed more than they were before. And there's so much talk now. And this is why I was saying, like, in the last year, I've really seen a shift. I really see it on LinkedIn. I'm seeing things like Gary Vaynerchuk has a chief heart officer for his company. Mm. Deloitte has a chief well-being officer. I mean, there are all these roles that are being created to do the thing that I do. And even I have a friend at Salesforce and his job is to advise like VP level and above within the sales organization on everything that's going on. He wants to basically know what's going on, how he can support them. And now he has his finger on the pulse of the entire organization. So if the top brass reaches out to him at any time and says, what's going on? Tell us how things are going. He can tell them because they've invested in this role. So I do feel like there is a shift happening. And I feel like that tolerance for that toxic leadership style is waning. But old habits die hard. And I still see, you know, a lot of my clients will be like, oh my God, my CEO just posted about culture. He thinks he's done now.
Love me. Okay. Damn it. Love me. And I will love you. Damn it. Yeah. And I'm seeing that, look, there's a lot of changes going on. Corporations are dropping people out like flies. You see things changing dramatically, the market. So when you go in, you as the person to coach these companies, what do you do? Who do you talk to when you go into these corporations? I mean, how does this all work with your company?
Yeah, so I like to work with like the COO. It's CHRO is great. Always the CEO is great. So I try at the C-suite because if you work with a VP of sales, you just can't get the permanence that you want. I can certainly help them and, you know, help them create this brilliant environment, but VPs of sales tend to leave their jobs after 2 or 3 years. So you don't get that permanence that you would at the top. But what I try and do is initially we have kind of a ground rules session of this is what this is what it isn't. And I'm going to go and interview a few of your folks, both employees and managers. I want to really understand what some of the key issues are that we're struggling with, and then give them an initial kind of impressions, an initial readout. And then we do some group coaching across the senior leadership or the executive leadership team. And I like to do an all hands call and bring everyone up to speed saying, hey guys, you're going to start seeing some questions from your leaders that maybe you haven't seen before. I want you to be open because this culture belongs to you and you've got to want to put in your best effort too. So that's kind of how that works. I do a lot of individual coaching, but I also do a lot of speaking. And the speaking is really fun because I can cast a really wide net and it does turn into, you know, people saying, oh my gosh, what you said made so much sense. Can I hire you as my coach?
And I can see a board of directors and the guy goes, I'm introducing you to our new, you know, person to deal with our hearts. Yeah. And can you see a couple of these guys going, what the hell is going on here?
Yeah.
Yeah. What do you do with those guys?
Thankfully I have enough humor and enough self-deprecating stories that I can endear myself to most people. There are always going to be the folks that are, reticent and angry and feel like they don't need it. But the truth is when you start to say, I want every manager to ask the question, how can I be the best manager for you? I want to record the results. And when you see certain people not doing it, you know where your problems are. So it becomes the heartbeat of the company. It becomes your health check. It becomes, okay, now I understand where we have issues and, you know, these people need training. These people are flight risks. This is where we need to invest more. It just really kind of helps you understand the health of your organization better than a survey could. You don't always get full participation on those surveys.
It's kind of mind-boggling to me that there's a career that teaches people how to be human to their workers.
To be nice.
Yeah. This is, you know, how to get the most out of human beings. I mean, it just seems like common sense to me, just on
Doesn't
a human
it?
Level. You know, if you're nice to someone, they're going to reciprocate and do great things. But if you're not, they're not. So,
well, when you think about it this way, especially in sales, the pressure's on, right? You've got deadlines, you've got quotas, you've got people to manage, you've got transactions to get through. There is often just a lack of, I got to take a breath. I got to check in on my people because we got to go, go, go. We don't have time for this.
Yeah.
And what leaders have to remember is when you make the time for that, everything else gets better. It's not a threat to your progress. And that's, I think, the whole push that I see some leaders struggle with, because they're like, oh my God, this is all fluffy and it's going to take time and I don't want to do it. But
yeah, it's crazy.
When they start to realize, the second you ask those questions, all of a sudden you become more important to the person that you're talking to. You become more relevant. You become more interesting. And look, for the people that have been a jerk or an asshole leader, this doesn't happen overnight. You can't all of a sudden be like, how can I be the best leader for you? I've been a jerk for the last year. You know, no one's going to answer them truthfully, but you've got to start somewhere and you've got to start to change your behavior, change your language choice. And there's steps that can be made that can help.
And I think, I'm sorry, go ahead.
Go ahead. Everybody has the opportunity to change. It's not you have to be cut from a certain cloth.
Right.
It's just, like you said, it's human.
Well, if the people in charge, I think, convince their folks that are working with them, under them, that they're accessible to them, I think that's a big thing.
Yeah, for sure.
It's huge.
For sure.
Huge.
You know, and I was dealing with, not to cut you off, but I was just saying that you reminded me of, well, let's go back to ego. Some of these leaders that are owners of the company, their egos are so big. I was working, because I don't do C-suite. I'm working with salespeople. I'm helping them with soft skills and all that kind of good stuff. But I saw him walk in. Didn't say hello to anybody. He comes in his little shorts. It was a mortgage company out in Orlando. I was working with their LOs. And to this day, I know he's doing other things. He's showing all the glitz and glamour, but I mean, I could tell that he's not there with the people, you know?
Well, and what a missed opportunity.
Yeah.
I mean, to if you walk in and you don't talk to people, you're just going to be untouchable. You're going to be unrelatable. You're going to be pompous.
Alienating them.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And I've certainly seen leaders have that style, but the ones who were beloved and the ones who anybody would die on the vine for were the ones that were so full of hugs, so full of, how are you? The last time I saw you, this was going on. I heard you got a new dog, you know, whatever it is, all of a sudden, like, you're spoken of with kindness, with respect, with all the good things. And everyone has the choice to make of what kind of leader they want to be.
How do you go through these corporate guys that are sitting there with a huge corporation? It's successful, so their ego is huge. Are you doing brain surgery? What are you doing to get them to finally realize that they've not changed? Because things are great. Hey, I'm making money. I got a nice jet. I've got all this stuff going on.
Well, it's funny. I was talking to a client recently, and he was telling me, I talked to him about my important question, and he goes, oh, Linz, I do that. I go, tell me, what do you say? He goes, I tell them, tell me why I'm the biggest idiot in the room. And I go, well, it's a different approach. I understand that you're we're trying to get to where I want you to go, but let me tell you why I don't think that would work. And I don't think anyone's ever going to answer that question. And he, you know, the light bulb went off for him, and all of a sudden he was like, oh, okay. And, you know, I tell a lot of stories about how I've fallen down and the mistakes that I've made, because they're good teaching moments, but I do it with humor, and I do it with, you know, you've got to understand you're going to screw up. You're going to say bad things. You're going to make big mistakes. And how you come up from those mistakes is really important. But, you know, when I love to ask some of those really ego ripe folks, you know, what do your people think of you? And how do you know? And sometimes they can't answer it. And when they can't answer it, it's almost like they're going, oh my God.
Or they won't answer. Or they won't answer it because it's embarrassing.
Yeah.
And sometimes it takes, you know, if the top banana is in this state, I'm not going to really be able to do too much. You know, you've got to be able to have a leadership team that recognizes they've got to do more and they want to change. If a company is, you know, reluctant to change and the CEO is not supportive. I'm sorry, guys. I have a puppy and she's playing with every toy she's got in her crate.
I bet she's a wiener dog.
She's really having a good time. So if you're hearing jingle jangling and squeak, that's what that
is. It's all good.
But it's, yeah, there you go. If you, you know, if you have a leader who doesn't understand any of these concepts, I'm not going to be able to do a whole lot. Right. You have to be able to work with someone who recognizes they can do better. And if they've been losing people and, you know, their attrition is high, their morale is low, they're not having people engage on team calls. That's the kind of people I want to help.
You know, and it's important too, I think, Lindsay, that, and correct me if I'm wrong, but that this whole, listen, I've made mistakes coming up. This did this one time and I went, what? And it blew up on me. And, you know, and that's how people learn, I think, the best. Yeah. And then when you relate those stories to them, they go, you know what? I kind of did that. They're just humans like I am. And it's, that's, I think, right, it makes it easier to relate to your bosses.
No question.
Yeah. Have you walked away from a couple of situations that you said, you know what? I can't do this. Have you ever done that?
Say it again.
Have you walked away from a situation where they wanted you to come in and you went, this thing is way too hard or too toxic for me to be able to even fix anything?
Not yet.
Good.
Great.
Not yet. No, I think just about everybody that I've talked to has an opportunity for some kind of change. And, you know, I think the hardest part is that when you've got a team that's not, not willing, they're not going to hire me anyway. So the ones that hire me recognize that they want to change.
So Lindsay, I'm interested in metrics of your performance with a company. How does a company say, Lindsay worked great? I mean, what is it that what they see? Better sales, better?
Well, you'll see a whole bunch of things. You'll see better engagement. You'll see increased sharing on social media. You'll see, which is, by the way, one of the most important things you can teach your people is the importance of building your personal brand. So I do a whole thing on that. You'll see all kinds of behavior changes. You'll see people asking for executive interviews. And I do a whole thing on creating a culture of advocacy that changes the fabric of the whole company. So there's a lot that is palpable that we can point to as really positive change. I think the hardest thing is, because this is mostly feelings and this is, right, you know, somewhat intangible, you can't just say, I can guarantee you 6% increase in sales. It's bigger than that. It's broader than that. And it's more subtle than that.
And it's more sustainable for the company's success.
Oh, yeah. Long term, for sure. For sure. I mean, I could see, and with the changes that are taking place with COVID and all these things, this is the time for someone like you to come in and help take them into the future of where this is going. Because, you know, I'm just looking at where the market is going. It's really unsure of how all this is taking place in the next several years. You know, we've got the real estate market doing its thing. You've got people laying off people. And then you come in and I think you could save the direction of a company. I mean, how do people get in touch with you? How does everybody who's interested in any of this get a hold of you?
So I'm on, my website is heartbeatforhire.com. And you can find all of my socials there. I'm on just about every platform but Twitter. I also have a podcast. And that's probably the easiest thing to find me. I'm very, very busy on LinkedIn. There goes my puppy. She just left the room.
The puppy has left the room.
Elvis is in there.
So, I mean, and Heartbeat for Hire, after talking with you these 35 minutes or whatever, how perfect is that for what you do and what you bring? Yeah.
Thanks.
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, we can't thank you enough, Lindsay Dowd, for sharing your experiences and your talent for getting companies on the right foot, really.
Yeah. Thanks so much.
It's my pleasure, guys.
Yep. Talk to you soon, and look up Lindsay because she could help you get a bigger heart. We need it right now.
Happy holidays,
Everyone
Lindsay.
Everyone can use more heart.
Thanks for being on. Happy holidays.
Thanks, guys.